This is Just Women, every Tuesday at 1 o'clock on Brooklands Radio.
Hello and welcome to Just Women, the weekly talk show on Brooklands Radio with me, Jackie Mitchell, when we spend an hour talking to some very interesting local women about subjects surrounding their work, lives, children, as well as their amazing experiences. On today's show, we have Sarah Ziegle, mother of four boys with autism, who's written a new book, and Jamie Lee Abter, founder of Be Distinctly Different, a boutique travel marketing agency. But to start with, I'd like to welcome our first guests to the studio, Jocelyn Close and Tori Lum from Driving Miss Daisy. Hello there.
Morning.
Hello, Jackie.
Hi, thanks for joining us.
That's a pleasure.
So, first of all, the first thing that attracted to me to your business was the name, Driving Miss Daisy, because wasn't that an old film some time ago?
It was. And, well, the business started in New Zealand about 7 years ago by this lovely lady called Mel Harper, who used to drive her great aunt around. And great aunt Trish realised Mel was very busy with her children, and so she paid her neighbour to drive her to appointments, to wait with her while she was in an appointment and drive her home, giving her back her independence and her freedom. Mel Turner then realised this was a brilliant business idea and started up Mel Harper Driving Services in her town in New Zealand. And as it grew and grew, she realised it was a fantastic business that the whole of New Zealand could use. So she franchised the business, called it Driving Miss Daisy, and now in New Zealand there are over 60 franchises operating and about 150 cars, keeping people of all ages independent.
Well, that's amazing, isn't it? So how did the business then come from New Zealand all the way here to the UK?
Well, one of our colleagues was on holiday in New Zealand, spotted one of our lovely little cars with daisies on the side and somebody's drive, was intrigued, did some research, spoke to the management team in New Zealand and discovered what the service was all about, which is keeping people independent, trying to help people get together for social functions, help the elderly, help children, people with disabilities, people with living with dementia, a really wide range of people. And they discovered there was nothing like that in the UK. We have a number of transport options here.
But there's nothing quite like that, is there?
That's right. No. Be it voluntary organisations, but nothing that really offers the combination of companionship and a friendly service.
Yes.
And, you know, what we tend to say, we're family when family can't be there, and that's how we like to be seen.
Yeah, so in fact, you run a companion driving service.
That's right. So as well as the transport element, we set ourselves apart, but we go to the front door, we greet our guests, our customers with a smile, a friendly face. We give them all the assistance they need in and out of the car. We can take walkers, wheelchairs. We also have a wheelchair accessible car in many of our businesses as well. And they sit in the front, we chat to them like they're a friend or a family member. We really get to know our customers, and we are happy just to spend some time with them. We'll go and have a cup of tea with them. We take people to social engagements. We'll wait with them at a wedding. We'll take notes for them at a doctor's and relay those to family members if they need an extra little bit of support. So we go the extra mile.
It right.
sets ourselves apart from
And so who are your typical companies. Clients? Do they tend to be the elderly?
Majority are the elderly, keeping them independent, because if people are kept independent when they go out with friends, then they are more inclined to not have the onset of dementia as they keep their brain going. We have a lot of vulnerable adults who just need that assistance and support to go out to appointments and to go shopping, and we're their companion for that. We also have a large range of children who we take to and from school or from after school clubs with busy mums not getting home from work in time, and maybe sometimes we wait with the child at home until mum gets home. We also have, as Tori said, we have clients who are in wheelchairs, but we're then that companion. So occasionally we'll have a husband and wife. She isn't strong enough to push her husband who's in a wheelchair, so we'll push her husband and she'll come along. We had one couple who are in their 80s. They haven't been out for a cup of tea for 2 years. So
really, that's a long time.
It is. And they've been married for 60 odd years. We came along and said, will you really take us out and actually push us and take us into the garden centre? They could not believe that we would be that companion to get them out. And so now they book us every week and they go for a cup of tea every week, which they haven't done for 2 years. So we have a range of customers, from the very young to someone who may just have broken their leg or their arm, to someone who may be going for an eye appointment who can't see after their eye appointment, to the elderly. So we will take anyone who wants a trusted, reliable, friendly service.
Well, it sounds as though once you've done the service, that the people then book you repeatedly on repeated visits. Is that right?
They do. All our clients that we have, as are other businesses around Surrey in the UK, all our clients do book us again.
And is it just the two of you in the business?
No, it's actually a nationwide organisation.
Well,
now.
No, I mean in the one in Farnham
that
you run. Is
no,
it just the
there
two
are
of you?
There are five of us now. So
oh,
we
right.
have a number of other companion drivers and someone who helps out with taking the bookings. So we're really busy at the moment. So we've got both men and women in the business, which is great.
And is that a season? Is it seasonal business? When you say you're very busy right now, does it tend to be?
No,
seasonal?
We're growing all the time. I mean, we're in that a growing market with, you know, a real need to improve social care, keep people moving. When people are coming out of hospital, we try and do a lot there to help people settle back into their homes and be that extra, that transitional phase when they're getting back into a social life and keeping them from getting isolated at home.
Sure.
So we're in a lot of growing areas. So no, we're just growing.
And what about the security and safety elements? I mean, because if you're picking up children from school, you must have some papers or something.
Yes, and it's very important to us to have some really high quality people within the business, and we're lucky that we tend to attract really caring, high quality people. We also do have to have lots of checks. We are all DBS checked. We are licensed by
DBS?
The local authority.
Sorry,
that's the Disclosure and Barring Service.
Oh, okay.
It used to be called the CRB, so people might be more familiar with it, but it's now called the DBS. So it's police checks, background checks, and we are licensed by the local authority. We all have to have a private hire license, but on top of that, we do our own internal checking. We do our own training courses. We are dementia friends. We're first aid trained. We are trained in people movement, which means we can safely help people in and out of the car and transferring from wheelchairs and getting wheelchairs safely into the car. So yes, it really is a very safe and reliable service.
And what sort of rates do you charge then for this service?
Our service is all based on our time. So the client, we don't have a meter in the car, and so the client gets a quote for the whole journey. So whether that is taking a client on a 10-minute journey and then maybe 20 minutes around Sainsbury's, or 20 minutes to take the child in school and to wait with them, and then return journey, they get a price for our total time. We don't have a meter in the car, and so when they set off, they know exactly how much the journey is going to cost. It's all pre-quoted and pre-booked, and our prices are comparable to a local taxi company or a local care company, yet we offer this additional caring service and loving service.
Yes.
So that's how our...
And what sort of vehicles do you have? I know you said you have one that's for wheelchairs. What are the other vehicles like?
In our franchise, we have two Skoda Rimskas, which are lovely cars. They have glass roofs, so people can see out, and they're very spacious in the boots. We can take collapsible wheelchairs or walkers or lots of kit bags, depending which demographic of client we're taking home. And we have two of those, so they can have up to three clients in them. And as Tori said, we have a wheelchair accessible vehicle which can take a wheelchair and two other clients. So a husband and wife can go together, or we've had a husband and wife and their daughter. We all go together.
Oh, right. So you have more than one people sometimes.
Yes, absolutely. And we do trips. We've done trips to Winkworth Arboretum to see the bluebells coming out. We're going to do that again this year.
Oh, really? So
yes.
So pleasure trips as well as hospital appointments and things like that.
Oh, very much so. And we're looking to do a trip to perhaps West Green House this year, to the lovely gardens and tea rooms there. But the client will pay for the trip, which will include the entrance, it'll include tea and cake. So they go out and have a day out with friends, and then they can share the cost between two or three of them.
That sounds a really good idea, doesn't it?
Yes,
yes, absolutely.
Yes.
So the business has been going 2 years. So what did you both do prior to that, and how did you come to set up the Driving Miss Daisy franchise?
Yes, well, I worked for a bank in London, did that for many, many years, was fortunate enough to be able to take some time out when I had my children, so had a bit of a break, was very much looking for something a bit different, something where I didn't have to get the train to London, didn't have to commute. I wanted something to give me flexibility, be able to take my children to school, be able to watch them in their occasional match, do something a bit more rewarding, something which would give me something back, and felt as if I was giving something back to the community as well. So I came across this, it really struck a chord, had been looking after, you know, elderly parents, and I could really see the need from a first-hand point of view. So when this opportunity came around, we just thought it sounded amazing to do something so worthy and earn a decent living. It seemed, you know, too good to be true. So it's been fantastic.
So my background, I worked for British Aerospace for a while, and then taught for a while. Then, like Tori, took some time off to have the children. Then a colleague of mine, the gentleman who went to New Zealand who saw this car, gave me a ring and said, "Hey, I've seen this brilliant business. It's in a growing marketplace. All the market sectors you'll be serving are growing. Do you want to be part of it at the startup?" And I could see it was a business you could be involved with, earn a living from it whilst giving something back to the community. I didn't want to do it on my own. And so I gave Tori a ring. We used to go mountain biking together.
Oh, really?
Yes. Oh, okay. Now we know each other. And together we bought the business 2 years ago.
Right.
So, and then we have grown it fully from there.
Yes. So you decided to go for a franchise rather than just start up on your own business.
Yeah, the great thing about that is you have your independently owned business, which we can say is ours, but we're part of a team, which is great. The risk in franchising is so much lower than starting up a business on your own because it's a proven model. And we could see it been going for 7 years in New Zealand. We could see how successful it was. We knew we could transfer it to here, and it's taking off here. So the risks are so much lower within a franchise, and you're part of a team, so it's a really collaborative effort. There are now 33 franchises across the UK. We're all communicating all the time, sharing ideas, talking about how we can grow the business more. We're always looking for more really good quality and caring people who want to be part of the business, and we're trying to grow it right across Surrey.
Well, that's quite a challenge then, isn't
it? It is. So, but we're very ambitious, and we're seeing the need. We're getting calls from all over Surrey, from Woking and Guildford and Weybridge, everywhere. And, you know, we want to find really great people to be involved in that so we can help them out.
Getting back to the driver companions, are they freelancers or are they full-time staff?
The drivers, they're employed by us. Mm-hmm. And they're very much part of the business. They're very much involved in helping grow the business, talking to customers, doing some marketing, going to coffee mornings, helping us with some of our social events. Very much involved in the business. I think we're a great team. We call all our employees, they're all daisies. And we're very much a close-knit team. And they love it. They really enjoy it.
Yes. And when you say you're based in Farnham, so geographically, what area do you actually cover your franchise?
We'll take people wherever they need to go.
So if somebody in Esher wanted to call you, would that be too far? Or
We could do it, but what we'd really want to do is get somebody set up with their own business in Esher to be able to service their local community. Mm-hmm. So we really want to have branches all over Surrey where we can really service people, because that's where it's the most economic for our customers. So we're not having to travel too far. But we take people from Farnham wherever they'd like to go. We take them to London. We take people to the theatre. We've taken a couple to Somerset for their holiday. We'll take people to weddings in far-flung lands. So we'll do whatever people we need. We're really flexible.
And what's the most unusual assignment you've had?
Gosh, that's a question.
Oh, the wedding sounds quite exotic.
Yes. I think one thing that really is almost at the other end of the scale, we take quite a lot of people to funerals, but we are there almost impartially for them, but we are there for them to lean on. We are there to support them and actually give massive support to their families. The family don't have to think about great aunt, she needs to be picked up. We take care of everything. We'll collect them. We check they've got their bag and purse and everything. And we'll then, we are there for the family, and the family can just know that great aunt is taken care of.
Yes.
And on the flip side, we have had a car of three boys who all get in the car going, "I'm not getting in the car with daisies on," but actually once they're in, we're off, we're going, we have the music on for them, and it's been great. So we have both ends of the spectrum. Yes. And then we have amazing people who we have. I took a commando who's been in the Second World War this year.
Wow.
This week. And we have a gentleman who writes French history books. And used to lecture at Sandhurst. So we have the most amazing customers.
A diverse customer list,
yeah,
isn't
really.
It?
Yeah, really. We've had some great stories. We hear some great stories. Yes. And it's a real pleasure, because at the end of the day, our customers have been so appreciative. We've had some amazing testimonials and feedback, which is lovely. We go home feeling like we've done a really good thing. Mm-hmm. And so nice to feel as if, you know, you've put a bit of a sparkle into somebody's day.
Yes, absolutely. So how do people get in touch with you then? Do they ring you up, or...
Yeah, we have our direct number, which is, shall I give you that? 07525 873 050. We have a lovely website, www.drivingmissdaisy.co.uk. And you'll have a lovely Daisy on the end of the line, or someone will get back in touch with you and can tell you more about what's happening in your local area.
Fantastic. Well, thank you both very much for coming on to the show, and wish
you
great success with
the
business. Do keep in touch.
We will.
Thank you very much, Jackie.
Thanks so much.
That's fine. So that was Jocelyn and Tori from Driving Miss Daisy, and that concludes the first part of our show. In the second part of our show, we'll be talking to Jamie Lee Abter from Be Distinctly Different.
This is Just Women, every Tuesday at 1 o'clock on Brooklands Radio.
Are you tackling a DIY project? Are you unsure about what you need? Would some expert advice come in handy? Then head on down to Fetcham Home Hardware at 226 Cobham Road, Fetcham. We are a family-run business based in the community and offer a really friendly and knowledgeable service. We know that you will be amazed at the comprehensive range of products on offer for DIY and the home. You'll find tools, paints, cleaning materials, light bulbs, heaters, kindling logs, coal, our very handy key-cutting service, and lots more. And if you mention you have heard this ad on Brooklands Radio, you will receive a 10% discount on the spot. So whatever your DIY or home requirements, visit your very own Aladdin's Cave. Fetcham Home Hardware in Cobham Road.
Hair Mechanics is Surrey's premier hair and beauty salon group, with two superior salons, one in the heart of West Byfleet and the second in the Bourne Valley Garden Centre of Addlesden. Hair Mechanics offers hairstyling and finishing, beauty and holistic therapies, nail treatments, tanning and electrolysis. For our office promotions, contact information and more, please see our website hairmechanics.co.uk or call 01932 350 877. Hair Mechanics, Surrey's premier hair and beauty salon group.
Hi, Olivia Lynch here. Join me on Tuesday nights from 8 till 10 for my evening mix of my favourite new tracks and classics, with everything from indie to funk. Each week I'll also share with you my soundtrack of the week. So join me on Tuesday nights at 8 for some great tunes on Brooklands Radio.
You're listening to Just Women on Brooklands Radio. You can join in by emailing any comments or questions you may have to justwomen@brooklandsradio.co.uk or check us out on Facebook. Search for Just Women at Brooklands Radio. Just Women is just what you need.
Hello there and welcome back to Just Women with me, Jackie Mitchell. I'm now joined in the studio by Jamie Lee Abter from Be Distinctly Different. Hello there, Jamie Lee. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for welcoming me to the show.
Good to see you. And it's wonderful you're doing a live Facebook video.
Yes,
that's really
so
good while we talk.
Definitely. So yeah, on Facebook, it's Jamie Lee Abter. You can watch it live.
Yeah. Go for it. So before we get on to what your company does, perhaps you'd like to give us a bit about your background. What did you do before setting up the business?
Oh, fantastic. Well, I'm actually originally from Barbados. So I moved to the UK about 8 years ago to do my master's in tourism management and marketing at the Bournemouth University. After completing that, I got the opportunity to work for the Caribbean Tourism Organization, and I did a short stint with them, and that really piqued my interest for the UK travel industry and really being a part of, you know, being instrumental in that industry. So I went on from there to work with a luxury tour operator called Prestige Caribbean at the time, and that was pretty much my dream job. I was traveling every couple of weeks. I was enjoying these fabulous hotels and, you know, just really enjoying the life that I kind of imagined that I wanted. So that's where I kind of started in terms of my background. Prior to that, back in Barbados, I obviously worked in the travel industry because being Barbados, Caribbean, tourism industry is pretty much the mainstay for most of the islands. So I was working in the travel industry prior to that as well.
Right. And then what happened then to make you start up your own business?
Interestingly enough, I got pregnant. I was pregnant with my first son, and he was born prematurely. He was born at 25 weeks. So that was a major, major shock for me. A major shock for everyone, because it was very spontaneous and sudden. So it was during that time that I couldn't then go back into my job because he was in hospital for about 3 months, mm-hmm. and then he came home on home oxygen for another 4 months. So it was a very, very difficult time, and you had to make very tough decisions. I just couldn't go back to work, couldn't have that same, you know, lifestyle that I was afforded before. At that point then, I was like, well, this is the time for me to do what I always said I wanted to do, and I said I want to start my travel marketing business, and I got cracking on it, really.
And so how did you get cracking? What did you
do? Wow, that was a process. That was a process. And it still is a process because I feel if I'm continuously learning, obviously, having connections within the travel industry, I started there. I got a couple of my old clients that I used. Business that I used to work with prior, they became my first client. So that kind of eased me into the kind of entrepreneurship process. And then from there, you know, networking, building a portfolio, you know, building your personal brand, getting people to know about me, that then started the chain.
It all began to snowball, I guess.
It then all began to snowball. Slowly but surely, it's getting there.
Yeah. And do you just work in the Caribbean?
No, actually. I have worked outside of the Caribbean before. I worked with Sri Lanka training program before. But majority of my work does focus on the Caribbean, I guess, because, you know, originally from the region,
of course.
People usually come to me for the Caribbean stuff.
Definitely. And then you've been recently named as one of TTG, which is the Travel Trade Gazette, for listeners who don't know that. Mm-hmm. The 30 Under 30, Tomorrow's Travel Leaders. Well, congratulations for that.
Thank you very much. Yes. It was a great achievement to be named as one of the 30 Under 30 Travel Leaders. It kind of signifies, you know, all the hard work that you put in behind the scenes that people don't actually see. And to be awarded a designation such as that self, it was really a tremendous feeling, definitely.
And what did they give you then? Did you get an award or
a piece of paper, they put you on a kind of a 1 year training kind of program. So every couple of months we have sit downs with really inspirational leaders within the travel industry. We recently had one with Chris Brown, OBE, who is the chief executive officer of EasyJet. So she came and she talked to us and she gave us a bit about her story and how it was for her to get to that point where she is now. So we have these really, really great speakers, you know, inspirational speakers that come and they talk to you about how they've got from where they are now to where, you know. So that's one of the key parts of the whole thing. But then also you're among 29 other amazing individuals who are doing fantastic things in the travel industry, and we network together, and hopefully lots of different businesses will come from the networking angle.
Oh, brilliant. So you could do collaborations with some of the other winners.
Exactly. And then the profile, it also raises your profile within the travel industry, because as the TTG is the Bible of the travel trade, people see you, people want to work with you then, you know. I've already got opportunities to work with some amazing brands. I have an event coming up in a couple of weeks, next week, you know, I got that opportunity because of the TTG. They reached out to me. So you get some amazing opportunities come your way.
And what did Chris from EasyJet say that was particularly inspirational?
Ah, interestingly enough, from her background, where she's come from in terms of, you know, not really, she's not from a very, you know, rich or wealthy background, but having to stay focused and working and, you know, keeping focused on your goals and working towards what it is you want, that's particularly stuck with me.
So that really sort of helped.
Definitely, because that's a key tenet in business. You know, you can oftentimes get strayed away from, you know, what you're doing, because in business so many things pop up all the time that can take you off, throw you off guard. You have a goal set and you focus on that goal and you're working towards it, you go for it.
Yeah,
don't
you? You can't be distracted by other things.
You can't be distracted by other things. Or you try not to be distracted by other things, but you know that you have that goal in mind that you want to go after.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And you say it's a one-year education type of thing.
Yeah.
So when does that finish then?
That ends at the end of this year. So the new crop will come in at the end of, I think, October.
Oh, right. So you've got quite a long way to go.
A while to go, yes. So looking forward to the next one in May. They haven't announced a speaker yet, so that should be exciting.
Good. And then, but you also have two other businesses, don't you? Because you're also co-founder of Your Caribbean Travel.
Yes.
Where you encourage people to work from the beach.
I do. Where else should you work from?
Absolutely. And why not?
Why not?
It's a good idea to me, don't you think?
Definitely. Well, Your Caribbean was born about from my love of the Caribbean. Mixing my marketing know-how with my love of the Caribbean, Your Caribbean was kind of born. I love the Caribbean, so I wanted to really show people that authentic Caribbean experience. And we have some amazing experiences on there. We're not just you call us and we put together a holiday for you. We give you a full experience of the Caribbean. So we work with clients who might just want to have a really nice luxury holiday, but still with a twist of, you know, authentic things to do. So going to meet with the locals, going to have a sit down at their in their house and having tea with them and having a chat. Or you might want to go and, you know, sorry, lost words. Snorkel with some turtles.
Yeah, yeah. Why not? Yeah, on, yeah, sounds wonderful.
So many things to do. Yes. As I said, the work from the beach experience. People are absolutely loving that one.
I bet they are. Yes.
They are. And we have one coming up that we are, it's actually not in the Caribbean. It's more like Your Caribbean does Dubai. So we're taking a group of fantastic ladies, business ladies, to Dubai for 4 days. Retreat where they can just recharge, refresh, have amazing travel experiences all at the same time.
That sounds rather good. Yes, yes. I bet that's full.
Almost there.
Yeah, I can imagine. I can imagine. So what would you say if somebody was going to the Caribbean for the first time? What would you say to them? What should they do? What should they not miss?
So, first of all, it all depends on which island you're going to go to, because there's so many choices.
Yes. Well, which island would be the best first choice, would you think?
Well, if I don't say Barbados on here, people are going to shoot me.
Okay, let's go for Barbados.
So we're going to say Barbados first. That's definitely one of the islands. If you want to go, if you're going to the Caribbean for the first time and you just want to have a get to experience it and see what it's all about, Barbados definitely, because it's much more, you have a bit more, much more developed, but you still have all of those fantastic activities and things that you can do on island. Then you got islands that I personally love, like Antigua, amazing beaches, absolutely stunning hotels. You have St. Vincent and the Grenadines, one of my personal favorites, where you can island hop all around the Grenadine Islands. There's so many small little islands. Bekwe, one of my favorite Grenadine islands, is absolutely gorgeous. And I think Princess Margaret, she used to go there because there's actually a beach named after her. Princess
really? Margaret is that
beach.
Really?
Yes,
gosh.
Princess Margaret Beach. And
didn't
it's
know that.
Absolutely stunning. And so there's so many things to do in the islands. It all depends on what it is that you want to do. There's always something for everybody, definitely.
And is there a particular time of year which is better to go?
It's year-round, definitely. Year-round. I would say year-round.
So I don't have to...
I wouldn't want to pigeonhole you to any particular time of the year. It all depends on your preference.
There's really no rain season or anything like that?
Well, there is a rainy season, but liquid sunshine, I like to call it. Liquid sunshine.
Oh, sounds wonderful. Sounds great. Hey, any time of the year then we can go to the Caribbean. Sounds brilliant.
Year,
well, it's always been a very, a destination of fantasy, isn't it? I mean, James Bond movies have been filmed there, haven't they?
Yeah, definitely.
And loads of others, I would
and
imagine.
Loads of Pirates of the Caribbean.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, you have loads of other movies that's been filmed in Caribbean islands. And there's so much, I mean, it's a warming feeling when you step off there. And I guess you can experience these things anywhere in the world, but when you step into the Caribbean, it's the people that really make it the holiday of the lifetime. Definitely.
Yeah, yeah. And do you get to go there a lot yourself?
Well, I used to get to travel quite often. Now, being a mummy, wife, it's quite difficult to get away, but I try to get home at least, get to the islands at least once a year. If it's for business, then any other time, yeah.
Yeah. So how many times a year would you roughly get to go?
I'll say two at the max.
Depending on any work projects,
depending
I suppose.
Depending on work projects, yes, or my personal holiday.
And then you also got another project coming up in the Travel Know, a podcast and e-newsletter. What's that all about?
In the Travel Know, that was born about from my knowledge of working with travel agents and tour operators in the UK. I found a niche where I thought travel agents, they do a lot of fam trips where they go to destinations and get to experience hotels and brands. So it was an opportunity for them. I was like, where's the opportunity now? How do we tie this back in so that they can come back and tell all the other agents about what they've done, what they've experienced? So Indie Travel Know was born, which is a podcast that gives travel agents and people into travel industry the lowdown on the destinations, hotels and travel brands. So it's basically like a crash course in how they can sell it effectively. So they come on the podcast for 15 minutes and give me all the details about their exciting trip to Barbados, and it's usually sponsored by a destination. So we've done Grenada, we have Barbados coming up quite soon. So that's really picking up speed.
Yeah, sounds really, really good idea that. And also you've got the travel marketing toolkit.
Yeah, I'm a busy girl, aren't I?
You are. I don't know how you find time for all this, and you're a mum as well. My goodness gracious, how do you juggle your time?
I don't know. I don't know, honestly. But the travel marketing toolkit really is an offshoot of Be Distinctly Different, our marketing and what we do. We just go out now. We teach travel and tourism professionals about marketing, branding, PR. We have an event coming up next week, Thursday. And it's
What can tell us about that?
Yeah,
what's
it's
that
called
about?
Travel Talk, Managing Your Digital Footprint, and it's for travel brands. It's in association with Digital Visitor, who are award-winning travel social media agency. And we'll be giving, it's a really nice 2 hours of networking with different travel professionals in the industry, and we'll have a short talk about, you know, how you can manage your footprint. What are some of the do's and don'ts that you should be doing online? How can you create engaging content? So those are the kind of things we'll be talking about at the event.
Because you're quite prolific in social media, aren't you?
Prolific, yes. I do try.
Yes, absolutely, yes.
I do try. I do love my Instagram and I do love my Facebook. So,
and has that helped you get your business going, would
100%.
You say?
It's definitely helped me and it's helped my clients. I've seen them grow tremendously through Facebook. I have a client who's actually outside of the travel industry and distinctly different landscapes, and we see tremendous results as a result of our Facebook marketing and Instagram. So definitely one of our key kind of tools.
Okay, so the event next week, that's just for travel professionals.
Just for travel professionals.
But if there are any travel professionals interested listening who would be interested, they could just get in touch with you on your website,
Get in touch with me via the website and give me a call and we can get you on the guest list.
Okay, and what about Travel Chatter then? What's that?
Oh, Travel Chatter is actually a part of the whole Your Caribbean. So that's a forum where we are kind of creating where people that are traveling to the Caribbean can connect on one platform and talk to each other, really. So once they're in the Caribbean, they can...
So they can exchange ideas.
Okay, where are you going to be? Yeah. Can we meet up probably at this bar if you're going to be in Antigua?
Oh, what a great idea.
Yeah, so it's kind of like, you know, so that's where that's coming from.
That's fantastic. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you very much for coming on the show.
Thank you so much.
Would you like to give us your website address in case people want to get more information?
Well, you can find majority of my information on bedistinctlydifferent.com. And then I'm all over social media at Jamie Lee Abtar. That's the easiest way you can find me. You can find me... Once you find Jamie Lee Abtar on social media, you've got me.
Okay, thanks very much, Jamie Lee.
Thank you so much for having me, Jackie.
Thank you. That was Jamie Lee Abter from Be Distinctly Different, and that concludes the second part of our program. In the third part of our program, we'll be talking to Zara Ziegel, who is author of Coping with Autism.
This is Just Women every Tuesday at 1 o'clock on Brooklyn's Radio.
I'm so glad you're open.
Thank goodness you're here.
Do you ever close?
Did you know the pharmacy at 20 Church Street, Weybridge is open 100 hours every week to meet your immediate medical needs? We're here for you from 7 a.m. to 11 p.m. weekdays, 7 a.m. to 9 p.m. Saturdays, and 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. on Sundays. Our friendly and knowledgeable team can provide you with the advice you need, as well as helping you with repeat prescriptions, all the over-the-counter products you would expect, and if you can't get in to visit us, we will deliver to you. The Pharmacy, 20 Church Street, Weybridge. We're here when you need us, 100 hours every week.
Do you need an accountant or a part-time financial controller who understands your business problems and is willing to work with you in the here and now rather than telling you what you did after you did it? You need to talk to Goddard's Accountants. Goddard's will deal with the hassle, leaving you to expand your business. And, as we've been in our business for some 40 years, you know you're in good hands. Phone us on 020 8941 2187 for the expert advice you require. Goddard's Accountants, West Molesey. We take away your pain so you get the gain.
When you're looking to send important documents and packages, don't settle for second best. Choose Mailboxes etc. in Church Street, Weybridge. We offer you high street access to fast, reliable and internet trackable delivery services from world-class couriers, including UPS, FedEx, Parcelforce and DHL. We also offer a range of Royal Mail services and can pack your shipment so that it arrives safely. Around the corner, around the country or around the world, big or small, Mailboxes etc. in Weybridge can collect, pack and ship it all.
You're listening to Just Women on Brooklyn's Radio. You can join in by emailing any comments or questions you may have to justwomen@brooklynsradio.co.uk. or check us out on Facebook. Search for Just Women at Brooklands Radio. Just Women is just what you need.
Hello there and welcome back to Just Women with me, Jackie Mitchell. I'm now joined in the studio by Sarah Zeigel, who is author of a new book, Coping with Autism. Hello, Sarah. Thanks very much for joining us.
Good afternoon.
Well, I've looked at your book and it looks as though there's an incredible amount of research that's gone into it.
I don't think it's that much research as learnt. It's what I learnt over many, many years. I've got four boys. They've all got classic autism. Classic being the non-verbal, no eye contact, that kind, the severe kind of autism, mm-hmm. which gets diagnosed much younger, 2 or 3 years old. So in fact, really, the book was written mostly from my own experience. I didn't have to look very much up at all.
Really? Because it looked very impressive and a lot of references at the back and everything.
Well, the only thing I did have to research was epilepsy, because very fortunately my boys don't have it. And the EHCP chapter was a bit complicated because statements have been changed and they're now called EHCPs and nobody really understands them very well.
What does that stand for?
Oh, Education and Healthcare Plan.
Oh, right. Thank
instead
you.
Instead of a statement. So it combines the educational needs with the social care needs. But it's still being rolled out. I still don't have one for any of my four boys yet. So it's a bit more of a complicated system. It's meant to work better. But I didn't really understand it when I was writing the book. So that was one thing I did have to research.
Oh, right. OK. So, yes, as you said earlier, you're mother of four boys and the two eldest, I believe, have just turned 18.
They were 18 2 weeks ago, which is lovely, except that they're now adults. And one of them thinks that being an adult means suddenly he can do everything that he wants to do. And he thinks he can travel independently, he should go off around the country, all sorts of things he's now campaigning to be able to do. But unfortunately, he's not quite able to yet. So it's quite a hard process for him to realise that actually overnight everything doesn't change except he can go to the pub.
Ah.
And he has done that once.
Oh, right. And how was that?
That was great because he's a runner. The running fraternity have been fantastic. They've been so supportive. So he goes to a local running group that's run in a shop in Sheen, and he's known them very well. And they were having a leavings drinks last week. So I said, fine, go to the pub with the boys and have a drink and come home afterwards. So he did.
That's marvellous. So and I believe also you got an artist and a drummer.
Yes, he's the artist. His twin brother is a drummer. So next year they're hoping to go to college and do BTECs, one of them in art and design and one of them in drumming.
Very impressive.
But basically the book, the reason for the book was really also to just show how much you can do. Unfortunately, when children are diagnosed, paediatricians and other health professionals almost write them off and say there's not much you can do. They're
well,
autistic.
That's what happened to you, isn't
there's
it?
There's not much expectation. Well, you can do a bit of this. Well, you can do that. They don't really offer much support. And we found a system called ABA, which is Applied Behavioural Analysis, which is a one-to-one specialist system. And it's individualised to each child, and they learn at their rate, and they learn what they need to learn, and they learn everything. So they don't just learn how to read and write, say. I mean, speech is the first thing. If you can get speech, that's your most important thing. But if you couldn't get speech, then they teach them another communication system. But they teach everything. So it's social skills and going out and about in public and being able to handle noise and being able to handle the bustle of world. And that's equally as important as learning anything academic, because what's the point of academics if you then can't actually go out the house and enjoy the rest of your
sure.
life?
So how does that work then? A tutor comes to the house?
Tutor comes to the house ours started very little at 3. So a tutor will come to the house and look after that child for a 3-hour session. And within it, teach a whole list of things. It's quite a complicated system and they're quite highly trained, but they don't have to have a degree in it. But there are qualifications you can do. And they might be teaching them language initially. They might be teaching the behaviour. One of our boys, you know, it's amazing now, the one that went to the pub independently used to just lie on the floor, scream, tantrum for hours on end. For the first year of his program, most of the time was screaming. He hardly had any language. The other one, who's a drummer, didn't speak at all until we started. So within 6 weeks, he started to make his first sounds.
Oh, how wonderful. Yes.
And now, I was saying to someone the other day that he wrote his own song at Christmas a couple of years ago, played piano by ear, wrote a song, And we didn't know he'd written this. And we had this Christmas big party for the all our tutors and carers, and he just said, I'm going to play this song.
How fantastic.
Played the song and sang it. And this is a child who at 3 and a half couldn't say a word.
That's so remarkable. It is
amazing. And you just want to say to people, look, you know, there's so much you can do. You can do it, but it's hard.
Yes, because I noticed there was quite a big chapter on diagnosis.
Yes.
And how people can accept the diagnosis.
Well, people don't. You find people like grandparents. Sadly, sometimes within the family, you may find the father may not accept and the mother may. So the mother might be saying, right, we need to do this schooling. We need some speech that we need to do this. And the father's saying, oh, it'll be all right. And the grandparents are saying, well, oh, come on, they're just a bit delayed. You know, it'll all be right soon. And oh, don't worry too much. You're just worrying about it. You know, they'll all catch up. And they also, sometimes this word language delay is used. And delay means it's just a delay and they're going to get better. And that's not necessarily so. So, that, you know, the terminology doesn't help as well.
Did you have these situations yourself with grandparents? And
Yes, we did. Yes, I don't think any of ours ever accepted it or ever quite understood it. And I think, you know, their perception was that our children were quite badly behaved.
Oh.
And yes. That, unfortunately, you know, is quite common in the public. And they don't look different. You know, children with autism, you may pick them out if they're doing something very obvious and they're waving their hands or they're jumping up and down or doing some obvious, what we call a stim, then you might pick them out in public. But if they're not, people just think you've got a naughty, badly behaved child who won't stand in a queue and won't wait their turn and starts having a paddy because they can't wait.
Dear, oh dear, that's very difficult,
yeah,
isn't it?
So I think that at least these days, autism is a bit more out there.
Yes.
In the public.
And
so
going back to the ABA, is that very expensive?
Very expensive. We went to tribunal 3 times in order to get our local education authority to pay for it. Unfortunately, it is expensive. And if you don't have the wherewithal, that's a huge barrier. And there are campaigns in the country trying to get it as a more mainstream accepted therapy. There are a few schools. A lot of it is done on a one-to-one basis at home, and then your child, like ours all did, go to a mainstream primary school accompanied by their specially trained one-to-ones.
Oh, really? Is that how it works?
So they can be in mainstream that way.
Yes.
Rather than being in mainstream and perhaps being given an untrained LSA or someone who's not very aware of what they should be doing and has no backup, where our therapists all had a supervisor every couple of weeks and a consultant who'd come in, and if there was a problem, then say, okay, try it this way, have all these methods to use. There's a lot of resources as well.
Yes, yes.
It's very, very intensive, but it works.
Yeah, well, yes, I mean,
it works.
You're the living proof, yes. Absolutely,
work.
Your boys, yes.
Yeah.
And is there a shortage of these tutors?
There's a shortage of tutors. There's a shortage of money to pay for the tutors, and there is a shortage of actual tutors themselves. They come and go. They may go off into something else as a career. They may just pop in for a few years. There's a few will stay and do their masters. But finding tutors is quite difficult.
Anyway, getting back to the book, I noticed there was a chapter about coping emotionally with the diagnosis. How did you personally cope with it?
I think we coped with the twins diagnosis probably not too badly. It was a shock. I had no idea at all. So we were shocked. But I think they didn't change overnight. They were who they were still. So you've adjusted to how they are anyway. And then adding the diagnosis, it sort of makes sense. But it's a horrible diagnosis because it's a lifelong disability. So it's not a diagnosis of dyspraxia or verbal dyspraxia or something that's stopping them speaking. And you think, well, okay, we can do something with that. This is actually a lifelong diagnosis, and you look ahead to the future and you just despair. And that's what I'm trying to do, is not have people in that despair mode.
Yes, because
you say, you know, you do move on. You move on, but your children also move on.
Because you said that you could find nothing out there at all.
Well,
in terms of a book.
Books-wise, I literally, the day they were diagnosed, I went to the library because I'm a book reader, straight to the library. And I picked up this book and it was just really depressing and said parents have unrealistic ideas for their children and that these children will ever work. And of course they won't. and I just put the book down. But the books can either be quite educational books at quite a high level, you know, explaining sort of the brain or the concepts. And, you know, when you're in a place where you've just had your child diagnosed, they're running around, you've got no time to yourself, they may be chaotic, they may be screaming, you know, your life is really, really hard. You need some help, but you don't have the time to sit and read a sort of what I call like a school book. So what I wanted to do is give people the basis of an overview, but also talk about the emotions, because I don't think there are any books that are really talking about how you feel. And the idea with this is that hopefully people could give it to their mother-in-law or perhaps the person who works with their child at school. So those people might have some insight into what the parent is going through. And the parent turns up at school and somebody says something negative and the mother bursts into tears. You know, they may not have slept all night. They may be absolutely shattered. You don't know what's going on behind that child. And people make judgments to the parents as well. And I think if we can let people know how it feels as a parent to have these children and what you're going through at the same time, perhaps people would be a bit more sympathetic and give you a bit more edge as well.
Sure, absolutely. Yes, and also there was another chapter about sensory issues. That was very interesting because you talked about a child who wouldn't eat anything if it was touching another item on the plate.
The list of different things that children seem to have are endless. I've got four boys and all four are different. So there isn't one thing you could say, oh, that's an autistic thing to do. Well, that isn't, because of all the four of mine, they will all do different things. So one of mine would only eat pasta and bread.
Very challenging for you.
they just have certain, you know, we've got over all of those things now. We have moved on. But there are, you know, they like the particular cup or they like a particular routine. Mine actually, the boys' table manners still aren't great. They're still a bit, as well as the autism, you often have other comorbidities, we call them. So two of my boys have got ADHD as well, which means they're very impulsive. They don't think and they don't care. And even though they're quite verbal now, they just say what they want to as well and they just do things. And that gets them into trouble. And people, again, think they're badly behaved, but they don't have any stop mechanism to think. They've got a degree of dyspraxia. So as I was saying about the table manners, then they don't eat very well. They don't look very polite when they're eating with their knives and forks. We don't have dyslexia. I'm not sure what the incidence of dyslexia is. I don't think it's as high, but children with ADHD is quite high. And anxiety. One of my boys is very anxious as well. And sort of almost OCD with the anxiety.
Oh dear.
And it all kind of wraps up together. So it's just this big, endless diagnosis that can cover everything at the moment, it seems.
So, and how on earth did you find time to write this book?
Well, I used to write the odd hour, literally an hour at a time.
Oh, I see.
So it would be, where it came from was that after a while, people realised I'd, at that time, got 3-4 children, all with autism. So people wanted to talk to me. And I kept getting phone calls. And a mother would be on the phone, pouring her heart out for an hour. How do I do this? How do I do that? And then a week later, how do I get this benefit? How do I do that? And I was thinking, I have no time. And I've spent an hour that I didn't have with one person. It's just not enough. So I thought, okay, if I get an odd hour, whenever I get an odd hour, I'll write it. I'll write what I would talk about. And that way get out to, you know, hundreds, thousands of people rather than just one at a time.
But that's fantastic, though, to have written this book. I mean, because it's not very easy writing a whole book.
Well, it isn't. I'm halfway through the next one.
Oh, my God. Oh, congratulations.
I can't stop
fantastic.
Now.
What's the second one going to be about?
Well, the second one will be a memoir, because I found from the book that what people really like in the book is the anecdotes. They like the personal stories. They like the stories of how it was, how it is now. That's sort of the message of hope. And how we've moved on and how things do move on. And you need that when you're in that horrible dark space. You need to know, you need to look ahead. When my middle son was diagnosed, my older boys were only 5 and really quite severe still. And I despaired because I just could see what I'd got ahead. And I just, you know, that was my worst time, I think. By the time my 4th little boy was diagnosed at 2, the older boys had all moved on and were talking and were doing quite well. And I wasn't as despairing because I could see his older brothers ahead and think, okay, it's hard now, but I know in another 5 years it won't be. And I saw that, and that gave me much more strength And that's what I want to do for other people.
Yes, well, that's what comes across from these books, is the message of hope. And how have you managed to remain so positive?
Well, you are, because they move on and you see them do things. And you see that if you do something, you get something back. And that everything you teach them, they learn and they move ahead. And they learn to learn as well. So once they start to learn and once they start to get the idea of language, then that increases as well. Also, with all my four boys, you know, this myth that autistic children don't like affection is just, you know, they are so affectionate. They're so loving. They thank me all the time. You know, if we've been out for a day, it's thank you, Mum, we had a great day. Well, that's really good.
Oh,
you know,
nice.
I mean, they're so positive themselves.
Yes, yes.
And the fact that they love everything they do, you know, and they're so positive. Like the one that wants to run, he wants to run in the Olympics. And, you know, he ran a big race last year and he won a school's race. And
oh,
he's been trying
great.
For 5 years. And this sort of determination. And he won it. And you think, you know, how can you not do everything for these children to see your child achieve something like that?
That's fantastic.
It's all,
yes.
You know.
And how about travelling? How does that work?
Travelling these days isn't so bad. We don't go very far. We have been on a plane now, but we didn't for a long time. We only drove places in the car, always. I've never taken them on a long train journey.
You must have a very big car, I'm thinking.
We have got a big car. At one point, we had three in buggies, so we had to have a big car anyway. They don't like it in the car too long. They get very bored. But these days, of course, it's much easier. You've got iPods and iPads and things, and they can sit and fiddle.
Sure.
In the old days, it was quite hard because they had nothing to do and they'd get very bored. So that was harder. And just travelling generally, or just going out and about, was hard because they would run across the road. And you've got three of them and they could all run across the road.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
Total hazard out.
Yes.
So that was always really hard as little ones. But now, of course, now they can cross a road. And it's all those things that move on and get better.
Yes. And how has your husband adjusted?
He's brilliant. I mean, he works full time. So I suppose I've had the brunt of it. But when he comes home, he's great with the boys. He's really good. He's always been really acceptant of how they are as well. He never rails, why me, why us, ever, which I find admirable. He's always in a good place that, you know, we can do this and this is where we are. And, you know, he loves the boys and I don't think he looks and thinks they should be doing this or they shouldn't be doing that. I think he appreciates, like I do, what they can do and what we thought they'd never be able to do.
Yes, yes. And getting back to the book then, there's also some chapters on therapies and education, coping with stress. And also I noticed there's a great deal of useful websites and resources for people, which would be very useful.
Well, the idea is if a child is newly diagnosed, that you'd be... When my boys were diagnosed, there was nothing. Nobody gave you anything. There's a few leaflets here, or that you can go online and look at this and go online and look at that. And you just don't know where to start. The idea that someone could just hand you one book with everything in it as a starter pack, but also as a starter to your emotions, because if you don't deal with your emotions, then how can you deal with all this other stuff? So it was just to wrap it around and make it easy. You can also dip in and out of the book. You don't have to read it from the beginning to the end. It's not... If you haven't read the first chapter, you wouldn't understand chapter four. So if you've got a child with ADHD and that's your main problem, you might look at that bit first. Or if you couldn't decide on a therapy, you might go straight to the therapies. If your child was going through diagnosis or you thought they had autism but you didn't know how to start, you might read that chapter first. Or you could direct somebody close to you to read a certain chapter. If they don't understand you and you think you've got an issue, say, read chapter two. That's the emotions and what I'm going through. And if you can't tell anyone and they don't understand what you're going through, you could say, read chapter two. This is how I feel.
Sure. Yeah.
So it's meant to be that you can dip in and out, and it's all in sort of small paragraphs. So it's meant to be quite accessible and not the sort of school book.
Yes. Okay. And how do people buy the book?
They can buy anywhere online. Amazon has got lots of reviews on Amazon. So if you want to have a review, have a look at a review, read it on there. But on Amazon, there's also a lot of other online places. You can get it to any bookshop anywhere in the world. I think some have gone to America. A friend got it in New Zealand. So any bookshop will be able to order it straight in the next day. But the great thing is that Waterstones now stock it.
Brilliant.
From about November, December. So every branch of Waterstones.
Okay, that's fantastic. Well, I'm afraid we've run out of time now. And we've also got your website. Shall I give that to listeners, or would you like to?
Yeah, that's... Oh, okay. I've got a Facebook page of the book's name, A Parent's Guide to Coping with Autism, which is an open page, and I blog most days about the boys.
Okay, and we've also got a website, www.sarahjziegel.com. That's sarahjziegel.wordpress.com. Okay, Sarah, well, thank you very much for coming on to the show.
Thank you very much.
And so I'd like to thank all our guests today, Jocelyn Close and Tori Lum from Driving Miss Daisy, Jamie Lieb Abter from Be Distinctly Different, and Sarah Ziegel, author of Coping with Autism. And thank you to my producer, Jave Jemitis. We're always keen to hear about local women with interesting lives, so if you know of anyone who you think should be on our show, please email justwomen@brooklandsradio.co.uk with their contact details and we'll get in touch with them. You can see details of our previous and future guests on our website, which is brooklandsradio.co.uk/justwomen, and you can also find us on Facebook under Just Women at Brooklands Radio. Do follow us on Twitter @Brooklands Radio. This show will be repeated at 8 p.m. on Thursday, and the next edition of Just Women will be next Tuesday at 1 o'clock, so do listen in. So it's goodbye from me, Jackie Mitchell.
You're listening to Just Women on Brooklands Radio. You can join in by emailing any comments or questions you may have to justwomen@brooklandsradio.co.uk or check us out on Facebook. Search for Just Women at Brooklands Radio. Just Women is just what you need.